Hey, what's going on, everyone? This is your Patreon Ask Nick Anything or Nick Pick for the month of November. Y'all drew me. Congratulations. Happy Thanksgiving if you live in the States. If you don't live in the States, happy Thursday, I guess, if you're watching this on a Thursday. If not, wait a week. Watch this on a Thursday. First question comes from Sawu. He says, howdy. What the hell's wrong with me? Howdy, Nick. With Thanksgiving now coming upon us, I'm curious, did you ever go Black Friday shopping? If so, did you ever see anything crazy happen while you went out? Absolutely not. You guys have to understand, Black Friday right now is everyone just shops online, right? It used to be Black Friday, Cyber Monday. But now the Black Friday deals start online, and nobody goes into the store anymore. When I was young, people told horror stories of Black Friday. So the people were like, if you go to a Walmart during Black Friday, you're going to get trampled. That was always what happened. And then you'd see video of people just like trying to run through the door, just running straight through plate glass doors. And it was ridiculous. And so from a very young age, I was just like, Black Friday, not for me. Not going to do this. If I want something, I'll buy it online. I'll wait for Cyber Monday. Nowadays, I just buy stuff when I need it. More often than not, if it happens to line up with a Black Friday deal, or if I need something like, if I was going to buy like gaming monitors right now, I'd be like, I'm going to wait a week for the Black Friday deals to pop up, because obviously you're going to get like $50 to $100 off those bad boys, depending on what you're spending. So stuff like that's great. I always look for deals here and there, but I don't specifically wait for that in any way, shape, or form. Saul Herrera says, hey, Nick, last month's Patreon Q&A with Tim, he mentioned you were all about the adult stuff for the company, like accounting and everything. How did you end up learning about that? Did you have prior experience with IGN, or was it something that you had to learn about when first starting? Kind of funny. I had to learn everything when I first started this company. And a lot of that was just out of necessity, because Greg, Tim, and Colin had zero interest in figuring out how to get us paid, how to get healthcare, how to get, you know, rent paid at places, things like that, how to sign leases and stuff. And so a lot of it was just kind of, I'm a paranoid human being. I don't want the IRS coming knocking on our door ever. And I never want, you know, I like people to have healthcare. That was a big thing for me too. Cause I want, my big thing when we left, I was like, well, if one of us gets sick, at least we'll have some level of healthcare, and that'll be important. And so I took all that stuff on just from sheer just necessity of wanting to make sure we had that for the company, so that the other guys could go out and create the content along with me. I could create it too. Same with all the production stuff that I did originally, though. I knew all that stuff from IGN and the stuff I'd done prior. So camera work, audio work, all that stuff came pretty naturally to us, and I was able to lend my expertise in that regard. Bryce says, what's your ideal weekend? Couch potatoing or running errands and spending time with D? Both is the answer. Both. I like to try and get to bed in a reasonable hour on Friday night. Reasonable hour being anytime between 10 and 2, right? 10 and 2. You're driving. 10 and 2. And then I like to get a solid 8 hours sleep. 9 if I can. If D will let me sleep in. I usually wake up. Again, I don't have kids. If you have kids out there, you're probably laughing your ass off. Like, this guy, this guy's trying to flex on us with all the sleep he's getting, even though he's got these amazing bags under his eyes, and he looks like an NFL coach right now. I like to get a solid, I like to catch up on sleep on the weekends, and then the second I'm up, we're out the door, running errands, we're going to movies, we're going shopping, we're going for walks, all that stuff. And then right around, you know, 3-4 o'clock, I like to get everything done before the sun goes down, and that way if I got a show that night, I can relax for a little bit, or if we want to grab some dinner and come home and just watch a movie, we can just have some massive downtime there. But unfortunately, my weekends, like, a lot of my weekends get eaten up by work and by comedy. So I'll have a show. I had a show last Saturday, and then I had a show on Sunday, and then before the show on Sunday, I had to spend 3 hours watching, well, I didn't have to spend, I got to spend 3 hours watching The Amazing Spider-Man 2 for the in-review that was happening on Monday, which I usually have to do on Sundays because I can't carve out enough time during the week for that. So I really get like about a day and a half off, and I like to make the most of it, but it's awesome when I can get just a little time to reset and just kind of space out for a little bit. So that's important too. Michael Rojas says, hey, Nick, I know there might be some contention with this, but how cool would it be if you were on Knockback with Dagan? The two of you reminiscing would be so rad. Dagan's awesome. You know, I really enjoyed working with him when we did the animated series. And honestly, it would be great to work with him again. I having said that, I'm not saying we're going to do the animated series ever again, but that was a really, really fun project. And it's something that I haven't really had the opportunity to do again. So I look forward to the day when old Dagan comes back up in my text threads. I'm sure he does not, though. I'm sure he's probably like, no, Nick, stay away. Because that was a lot of work for him. But he was awesome to work with, and he's a really nice guy. Calvin B says, Nick, do you remember, one, the first movie that gave you nightmares? Yes, it was Nightmare on Elm Street 3. The one where they're in the insane asylum, and the woman has like the hands that are made of heroin needles. That gave me nightmares. And two, the first movie purchase or rental that disappointed you. Oof. Man, there was a lot. There was a lot back in the 80s. Actually, someone else has a question later about They Live. That was one of the ones that disappointed me because I was a Carpenter fan and I don't remember having seen that movie in the theaters. So I remember renting that and being like, wow, this movie, ooh, it just kind of piddles out. Having said that, great movie. Great movie. But it was movies like that where you'd get home, you're like, oh, and then you'd watch them and you just kind of lose interest with them. So now I'm thinking, no, I probably like They Live back then because it had a 7-minute fight scene. So I probably dug that. Now, I can't remember one that was especially disappointing. You know what? This is the thing. Growing up in the 80s, you were just happy to have something new to watch. It wasn't like now where everyone had... You got 30... And we got the opposite problem. It's too much to watch. None of it's good. Back in the day, it was like, there's two movies coming out this week, and hopefully they're good. If not, at least there's something else to do that's not watching network television. And three, the first movie you lent... you let someone borrow. I probably let someone borrow... I don't remember VHSs, but when DVDs came about, I let people borrow my DVDs a little bit here and there. So, like, I let people borrow. The first DVD I ever bought was The Replacement Killers by Antoine Fuqua, directed it with Chow Yun-Fat and Mira Sorvino. And I remember, like, giving that to people. We'd trade DVDs and stuff, and I'd watch it. I'd pop that DVD in my Gateway computer and watch it on my old 4:3 CRT monitor. I was so cool. I had the speakers that came with the Gateway computer, same color. Pop, pop, pop. Everything was kind of off-white. Because you know how computer monitors they start white, and you're like, it's always going to be like this smooth sailing. And then a year later, they're just like, it looks like someone smoked a pack of Pall Malls next to them the entire time because they're like yellow. That's how that used to work out for me. Hey, Nick. I wrote into the podcast, but this is going to get a more detailed response from a person. Oh, it's good to get a more detailed response from a person who is interested in filmmaking. Yeah. I am going to be quitting my 10-year desk job next year to follow my dream of being a filmmaker. I've worked on several short films and done some filmmaking courses at film school, so it's time to take the jump. Good. My question is, what unexpected thing came up when you left IGN that does something else? You like to advise people on changing their career like this. Okay, so what are the unexpected things that pop up when you change your career? Thanks for the daily distractions. You know who you are and you know what you have done. That's Chaz asking that question. Chaz, expect the unexpected, man. The good thing about, being a filmmaker, doing any in an independent production, you have to have this mindset. Back when we left, Kevin Smith gave us that piece of advice. He said, remember, you wanted this. And that is sort of the mindset you have to have, right? You have to look at challenges as they come at you as not these things, these tremendous roadblocks are like, oh God, why is God doing this to me? Why is the world putting these roadblocks in front of me? They are challenges to overcome. And that is all production is. It's just creative problem solving. That piece of advice, switch your head into that. And then anything that comes your way, you'll just figure out a fun, creative way to deal with it. Or you'll drink 500 milligrams of caffeine every day. Just push through until the night brings that sweet, sweet sleep. But, that's one of the things you get to do now if you're going to pursue a career, especially if you're going to direct or produce, is that you are just going to have to deal with the unexpected. And there's no way to expect it. You're just going to have to trust the people around you. Hopefully you surround yourself with a good team and you have great material and you just make it work, man. I will say the one thing that I wish I was better at if I were going to do this by myself was networking. That is a huge component of filmmaking. It's a huge component of everything, including comedy, everything I do. That is the one thing I'm like, I wish I was just better at a natural networker, because I think there's, if you've got the talent, if you've got the drive, but you don't have that extra step of being able to put yourself out there in front of people, then it's going to hold you back a little bit. So maybe focus on that as well. And also get a good accountant. Cozy Bear says, hey, Nick, all things considered, how have things been going for you and the world of comedy in 2021? Cozy Bear, come si, come sai, as the Italians say. So. It's been difficult. And again, going back to that prior question from Chaz, cool thing to say, networking is not my strong suit. And so much of it now, I feel like I have good material, but so much of comedy right now, is just begging people for stage time. And I hate doing it. It gives me anxiety. It's not something that I'm naturally predisposed to doing. And so I have to, like, it's such a slog to book shows because I feel like I'm putting all my friends or another fellow producers out. It was easier when we had the boat show, but we've cooled on that for a little bit because of the weather and all that stuff. So basically what you need with comedy is you have to have kind of a, it's unfortunate and I hate playing this game, but you kind of have to have a quid pro quo attitude about stuff. So you have to have something to offer people. And the number one most valuable thing for people is stage time. Obviously, if people get paid, that's great too. And there's a lot of people who need the money. But for me right now, I'm fortunate to be in a position where that's not the most important thing to me. The most important thing is getting in front of audiences that actually want to listen to comedy. And that's always been sort of my struggle. Having said that, I've been writing a lot, going to a ton of mics, and still going to Punchline every Sunday. So that's been fun. And I think I've gotten a lot closer with a lot of comics in 2021, which that personally to me is another really, really important thing, because part of the reason, obviously, I love hanging out with everyone that works kind of funny, and it's because we're very like-minded. But it's nice to have another group of people who are comics and like-minded and want to shoot the shit and want to talk about stuff and just hang out. And so that's been really, really cool too. And I've been fortunate to get to know some people that over the last like 6 months that are just have become friends, which is nice. So in that regard, it's going great. But it's always, it's just kind of, it's just an uphill trek with everything that you want to do that's creative. Ferdy says, since it's called Nick Picks, what are your favorite Nickelodeon shows of all time or favorite childhood shows if you're not a Nicktoon head? Also, I love you, man. I love you right back, Ferdy. I was not a Nickelodeon person, but I was not a Disney Channel person either. I liked network television. I liked Alf. I liked Small Wonder. I liked Growing Pains. I liked Silver Spoons. I liked Perfect Strangers. I liked Must See TV at Night. All that stuff was the stuff that I grew up watching, and I loved it all. Nick stuff, I don't know. I was kind of like, when I was younger, I mean, I'm a lot younger than most people that probably consume our content. Or when I was younger, I'm a lot older than most people who consume our content. So when I was younger, the shows that would have really appealed to me was like The Muppets and Sesame Street. And so like, I watched a lot of cartoons, but a lot of them you probably never heard of. Loved Muppet Babies back in the day. I did like the Disney Channel cartoons like Chip and Dale's Rescue Rangers, DuckTales. Those are my jam right there. That's kind of where I was. I didn't watch any of the actual live action Disney shows that I can remember though, because there were a ton of those back in the day. But yeah, I loved those. And of course, when Batman the Animated Series kicked up, I was like, this is the GOAT. And it still is. I still think that. Neo JD says, Nick, your Halloween pick this year was amazing. Are you going to get that framed for the new studio? No. But between you and me, Neo JD, I think I might just be a cat every year from here on out, just a different cat. So stay tuned for next year. I want to do like a all white cat with big puffy collar, similar to like Dame Judi Dench in Cats. I've never seen that movie, but I imagine that's what she looked like in it. Kenny B says, hey Nick, coming off of this month's Extra Life, I found I had a little less interest in watching the VOD of the stream this year. I think the disconnect is that I missed a lot of the fun kinetic energy that the old Extra Life streams in the studio had, whether it was people wandering on the set to giant games of Jackbox board games or just sitting around chatting. I didn't really have any interest in Metal Gear, so that immediately axed about a quarter of the stream for me. Do you foresee going back to the old style of Extra Life once you're back in the studio, or do you think the game-focused streams is more direction that will be taken? Thanks for all the content over the years. I'm a big fan. Kenny, I think we probably will go back to that. I imagine once the studio is done, anyone that wants to be, here's the thing, real talk, I think it's probably gonna be a mixture. Because I think that it's, for a lot of people, it's just gonna be easier to stream from home when you're playing a lot of games and stuff like that. And I think we're still probably gonna run like the same system that Kevin has right now. So I can see a mixture of people calling in from their various places that couldn't fly in from like, you know, if they're all over the world, right? And playing games with us. And then maybe having a block like that. But I do think there's going to be, I hope at least, and I'll push for it, that we'll have the couch and everyone's chilling and having fun. And then we'll have the story time and Greg getting all cozy and telling ghost stories. And, you know, everyone getting Edward White Hot Clanned up, White Clawed Handed up and stuff like that. Because that's really fun. And that's really the reason why we're still pushing hard to go back to the studio. Because that's the vibe we all like. Q King Rabble says, "Hey, Uncle Nicky, I really miss the way you stroked my beard those couple of times in Vancouver. Anyways, with myself being someone that just recently became a member of the Ubisoft Canada Guild, I'm wondering if you could get me a little more learnt on embargoes and such, considering you're the legal man. Thanks, Unky BTW. Do we know whatever happened to the Waterman?" I don't know. I don't think we know what happened to the Waterman, but I will say, as far as embargoes are concerned, oh man, I just check with Greg every single time. Mike and I had an embargo for Far Cry, and we talked for it, and I was like, let's just not play it until we're absolutely allowed to play it, because embargoes get so tricky, especially when you're doing video capture or streaming. Oof. Make sure to read the paperwork over and over again and ask questions if you have any questions with people. Or just find a friend that's really into it and ask him. That's what Greg is for me. Because embargoes, man, one time when we used to break embargoes at IGN by accident or on purpose, conspiracy theory. No, I'm kidding. It was always on accident. Someone would break an embargo and man, it is just hell. It is so, you feel so terrible about it because, you know, these publishers for the most part and these PR people, we're homies with them. We're friends. And so when something like that happens, it puts them in such a bad spot and you feel just terrible about it. And, you know, it's like, so you want to make sure you're on the up and up with embargoed information. You want to make sure you're not messing around with that. It's just important, right? Eric Meyer says, "Hey, Nick. Hope you're doing well. My question is, one-off interviews. What one-off interviews do you want to do? I'd love to see you guys do They Live." That's the question. "Because I want to see Tim and Andy's brain be broken by a 7-minute fight scene in alleyway. Me too. Thanks for all you do and always bringing the laughs. Sincerely, Eric." I don't know that we don't do a lot of one-offs. But I could easily see us doing directors like that. And so I would love to do like me turning an interview or pick some of those and do something like that. Obviously, Carpenter interview would be amazing. But the problem is, I think a lot of people just don't. You'd have to do just the hits, right? I don't know if you could do all the movies in one go. But that would be fun. I'd love to pick a director and just kind of like pick like 10 of their movies and go through it. I think that'd be really, really cool. Having said that, can't wait till we do Predator. That's going to be super fun. Can't wait till we do Die Hard. That's going to be super fun. We have a lot of cool series left to do, so I'm excited about that. Max says, "Hey, Nick, happy holidays. As a seasoned traveler, how do you deal with the language barrier, particularly Spanish? How good is your Spanish?" My Spanish is terrible. It is terrible. I got straight C's through all of my language classes. I'm not very good at it at all. I have not... let me think. When's the last time I traveled to a predominantly Spanish-speaking country? I guess Argentina would have been that. You know, it's funny because most places you go, we're sort of lucky. I'm fortunate to speak English because a lot of places, specifically high, like places that have a lot of tourism, generally everyone speaks a little bit of English and you can get by. But I always say the onus is kind of on you to learn a little bit of whatever language is that the company, the country that you're going to is at least please and thank you and the bare minimums of things so that at least people know that you're trying and you're putting the effort out there. Spanish and Italian, I probably know better than any other language out there by far, just because I took those classes in high school and college respectively. But yeah, it's tough. And when it comes right down to it, I am your typical dumb American. I just hope to God that everyone speaks English. And if they don't, that's why God made smartphones. Jeremy says, "Would you ever consider doing your own version of the movies that made us for Kind of Funny? If so, what movies would you consider using?" I wouldn't do the movies that made us because that's a lot. Like all that behind the scenes information is really, really cool. And it's really, really hard to gather. And I think they just do it so well that I'd rather just be a fan of that. But I would love to do at some point some level of fun joke video essay series. I think that'd be really, really cool. But there's nothing like that on the horizon. I'd love to talk more about movies in depth and infuse a little humor into them. That'd be really, really cool. I think that's it for the questions, everyone. But hey, I think it is. Actually, I'm gonna go through them one more time. Nope, they're all gone. Thank you guys so much for writing in, and thank you so much for supporting us over on Patreon. This is awesome. I love doing these and getting the opportunity to answer some questions and talk to you guys a little bit more directly. So please keep them coming. I'll be back, I think, in a few months to do another AMA in the new year. But until then, happy holidays and stay safe and stay cozy. Bye.